Greetings, friends. Welcome back to the Film Alchemist Podcast. I'm your host, Griffey, here with a brief introduction before today's exciting episode, our continuing journey through Kevin Smith's View Askew Universe. Guys, if you would be so kind, please go to patreon.com/filmalchemistpod. It's a great, if not the best way to help support shows like us. Help us grow. Help us get a foothold. Help us become the pod that we could be if you just understand. If you understand and help us out. We work really hard over there to make sure that your time and support is worth your value, right? So if you could go to patreon.com/filmalchemistpod, you can expect a huge Patreon exclusive library. You can have votes in what fills that library. We do a feature length commentary every month. We have a mini series following TV shows. Right now we have 3 seasons of Tales from the Crypt over there. We work really hard to try to make that worth your while. We built a really fun community over there. We would love to have you be a part of it. So again, patreon.com/filmalchemistpod, the best way to help this show. Thank you in advance. You can go to YouTube, subscribe to our channel, Film Alchemist. We're on all the socials you're on, including now TikTok. You can go see clips of the show and some other content we're making just for over there. We'd love to see you there. The email, filmalchemistpod@gmail.com. Did I already say that? Maybe I did. Who cares? Make sure you're leaving 5-star ratings and reviews everywhere you find the show. That helps us make our way through this fucking brutal algorithm. That's the truth. Also go to misfitparade.net to see some stuff that we're working on as well. All right. You guys know the deal. It's J-April. We're joined again by dear friend, comic book artist Jay Rollins. At Jay Rollins Art on all the socials with an S. Jay Rollins with an S. Wonderful guy. Wonderful artist, a comic book artist, right? Alex also wrote comics. I used to write comics. So it was really interesting today to do Chasing Amy, right? A movie that really kind of hit us in all our sweet spots. After, in the wake of Mallrats, Kevin Smith returning to the indie scene, I think this is the quintessential Kevin Smith movie. You'll hear me make the case for that. I think this is where all of Kevin's greatest strengths really took form. Like, now we really knew what the best version of a Kevin Smith story would be. I just unabashedly love this movie. I think it's fucking wonderful. I think the writing is so strong. I think the cast was great. It was nice to see him rediscover himself. As Holden says in the movie, I think, like Holden, Kevin finally had something personal to say. And I think the world is a better place for it, man. I really love this movie. It was great to go back and talk about Chasing Amy. I hope you guys are enjoying our journey through the View Askew Universe. So without further ado, enjoy our talk about Chasing Amy. All right, welcome back, everyone, on our journey through the View Askew Universe. Today we come to Chasing Amy. I would like to start here. Watching it again today, right? There's a couple things you have to take into account, right? This was post Mallrats, which was a not well received, I think you could call it a bomb, right? I think it became a cult classic, but at the time was not great. Kevin Smith finds himself at a proverbial fork in the road, right? Ends up making a pretty legendarily rough deal to get this movie made. Almost killed Scott Mosier trying to get this movie produced. If you watch and learn about the making of Chasing Amy, right? $250,000 budget, I think, to bring this movie in.
Yep.
You can see the roughness in this film, right? I would argue, though, that these restrictions, this was Kevin Smith's chance to prove it. Was the Clerks a fluke? Was he going to keep being a guy who got to make movies? I think you see some of the best acting that Kevin Smith ever got. I think the script finds this perfect balance between how Kevin Smith writes, but pulling it back so we didn't get so much rushed marble mouth like we did in Mallrats at times. And again, I think the thing about Chasing Amy that I had forgotten and really appreciated today is not only that this movie feels very personal, but how willing Kevin Smith was to attack his own bullshit in this movie. I think it's hard to make a case after rewatching these all for this month that Chasing Amy is not actually the best Kevin Smith movie. So I would like to throw it to Jay and see what you think about that. Because I was watching it yesterday. I was like, I don't know how you make a case that this isn't the best movie that he made.
Okay, so in the middle of watching it, my wife came down and started watching it with me. And I said, all right, so this is like a little rough. And,
yes.
And
Especially coming in the middle where you don't get all the charming buildup to the people becoming douchebags. But yeah.
This is what if the 37 dicks conversation was the entire second two-thirds of the movie.
Yeah.
And she came in during the hockey game scene.
Oh, wow.
That is a hard
contextual choice.
Yeah, that's a hard place to start the movie at.
So I was like, okay, real quick, she's gay. She told him she was gay. They became best friends. He's like, I can make you un-gay if you fuck me. And then she's like, I am gay. And then she's like, actually, I want to fuck you. And now they're having this conversation. He found out that she did some slutty stuff in high school and go. And she starts the scene. She watches it. And by the time they get to the parking lot, she goes, oh, yeah, I hate this.
Yeah. Yeah, well, again, that's a rough place to start the film. But what I was thinking about, because this is one of those movies where I thought back to when I was a kid. There was nowhere I was having conversations about this stuff as a, you know, preteen boy in rural Indiana. This was not something that we got to discuss or talked about, right? And the movie is littered with these side characters that have this kind of, you know, built-in homophobia about a group and culture that they just never interact with, they don't understand. And I was like, yeah, that was all of us back then, right? I've told this story on the show, I'm sure, but I had a manager at a movie theater who one time pulled me aside for saying that a movie was gay, which to me meant that it was stupid. And she pulled me aside and was like, hey, man, that hurts my feelings when you say it. I was like, what are you talking about? I wasn't talking about you. And laid into me about, hey, idiot. Right? Like, your words have consequences, right? This and that. And I was 16 or 17 and never actually thought that I would be talking about a gay person, right? Didn't even know I knew a gay person until my friend laid into me, right? And now my friend is on a journey, right? Told me they were a lesbian, but now is trans and has transitioned successfully. And it's a great story, right? And we're still great friends to this day. I think one of the things about this movie is I think people think it hasn't aged that well. I think if you were there in the 90s when this kind of stuff was happening, I think even the characters in the film, right? Like when her friends are like, another one bites the dust, when she says she likes a man, the scope of sexuality just feels so much narrower now. Because now we have all kinds of information and knowledge that, you know, this is bisexual or, you know, we have so many different kind of classifications and awarenesses of different kinds of sexual, you know, taste, right? That I think it's one of those movies that even the characters who are presented as gay are still working through where their spots are. So I don't actually think this movie ages as poorly, nor do I think the movie's ever making an excuse that Holden and Banky are right or victims of anything. I think it's calling out their deficiencies.
No, okay, so watching it with Kate, I was like, what's this going to look like? And yeah, she did say, I hate this, but she was just talking about a dickhead, horrible boyfriend being a shithead. And
Well, it's because she felt that moment. It has nothing to do with her being a lesbian. He's just shaming her for having sex with other guys.
It's because she felt that moment, and you feel that moment because these two great actors
are doing a great job. Scene. Oh my God, yeah.
And like him just completely just like zoning out and not being a person after she like screamed at him and showed her passion. That man is a piece of shit.
Oh, dude. Well, at the end, she apologizes. She's like, I'm sorry, Holden. And you're like, don't fucking apologize. And she goes in for the hug, right? Anyone who's been in a relationship long enough, you know, now we're fighting and you know you're wrong, but you're like, I've already drawn the line, so I want to not lose the fight. It's like one of the worst things that happens in relationships, right? And I don't know why. Maybe healthy people just don't do this. I don't know. But, you know, she goes in for the little hug and he pushes her away. And it's like, dude, she fucking gave you the like, here's a way to get out of this, you fucking moron. You've won. You got everything you said you wanted. She goes in for the hug and he pushes them away. But again, I think that the movie's not trying to make us feel for Holden. I think the movie is walking him through the streets like a naked Lannister. Shame, shame. So I don't know how you felt, Alex, but I thought this movie would age worse for me coming back to it than I feel like it did.
Yeah, I mean, this is my favorite Kevin Smith movie. It's been since I saw it when I was 15, 16. I don't know. I think I had a driver's license at this point because I remember borrowing. I remember borrowing this from someone specifically because I was talking about like going, I was starting this like Kevin Smith phase of my life where I was like really getting into writing and like learning how to like write for myself. And I had a friend who, I don't know if you listen to it, but this friend of mine, Matt Shore, he was like, hey, I have Chasing Amy, because I had only ever saw it in pieces on like HBO Zone or whatever the indie channel on HBO was when you would get the HBO package. So he was like, do you want my Criterion version? I was like, what's that? And that was when also I discovered what Criterion Collection was, which was great.
Nice. You were learning a lot then, yeah.
Because, you know, you get this. So I watched this entire movie, which absolutely floored me because I was like, holy shit. And I think, you know, I like the idea. Yeah, like it is the 37 joke, like for an entire movie. But what's fascinating is like, oh, you're also getting to see this screenwriter and director grow as an artist, because what it is it's not just that, it's the repercussions of that bit through an entire movie. And not only that, like it's about people's inhibitions. This is about, because, you know, I'm not going to say I was some experienced cool dude. I was a fucking nerd in high school. And like, I'm a fucking dork to this day. Like, I'm probably about as milquetoast as it comes when it comes to that kind of stuff. So it's pretty fascinating because I do see a lot of myself, not like as non-worldly, it seems a lot of the time, as like Holden and Banky are, but I do see a lot of myself where it's like, I don't think I'd shame anyone for their sexual exploits, but I would also be embarrassed that I wouldn't be like, oh my God, I'm dating a girl who's just so experienced. That's crazy. Like probably in my 20s, I would have been like, oh my God, like, this woman is so experienced and I'm such a fucking nerd. I haven't had enough sex. What am I going to do? Like, I'm not cool enough to shame someone for their sexual experience. But I definitely would have seen like,
I don't think Holden's shaming her because he's cool.
No. That's, I'm not saying he's cool. What I'm saying is he's conservative and he does that thing all guys do. And obviously this gets into the Silent Bob speech at the end, but like he does that thing all guys do. It's like, oh, I'm the fucking best. Like in your 20s, you're like, I'm the fucking Lothario. And, you know, when
you
you're in your
30s. You think that your dick is the ruby red shoes from the Wizard of Oz that's going to unlock everything. Yeah.
So when you find out that, surprise, surprise, other people have had sexual experiences besides you in this life, you're like, oh, that diminishes my fucking cool libido I have going on here. And, like, that's just shockingly false.
Yeah.
I think between the emotions and, I think it's just next level performances from Ben Affleck and Joey Lauren Adams, and I mean even Jason.
Not
Jason
Joey Lawrence,
Lee.
As
Jason
I made Lee. The mistake last not week. Joey, it's not Joey Lawrence.
Not well, Joey Lawrence, the one of the three brothers. and even Jason Lee, who's like Lee is doing like almost the inverse of Brody.
Yeah,
which is really cool to see. It's really fascinating to watch his performance because again, he's also going through the like sort of this unrequited change, and I'm sure we all see later on down the View Askew Universe line, which is a little strange, but it is fascinating still.
Unrequited change? What do you mean?
Well, like, you know, in the universe, it is assumed that he is a closeted gay man.
Yeah.
I don't think Kevin Smith, and I love Kevin Smith, obviously. I'm not sure Kevin Smith properly fleshed that out.
Show that to me well enough. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure I've seen it enough.
But I buy it enough.
You guys didn't know people that were like the most homophobic. Like I used to have this talk with my brother. He was the most homophobic, but then his wall was plastered in like fucking oiled up pictures of men. He wanted to be a bodybuilder, right?
Sure.
And I was like, something is not correct. Like, you love the male form so much, but all you do, like, the most homophobic guy when we were younger.
What
right?
I'm saying is,
did he turn out to be gay because you might have been influenced by this movie?
I mean, I don't know. I'm saying I don't know if he's listening. He's probably going to come over here and try to whoop me. But
closeted gay man story is not necessarily fleshed out in a way that I think is for 2024.
I think they do appropriate. What they do do, what is,
circle back to it.
What is his name? The Hooper. The gay black dude, Hooper.
Hooper X.
So he did, the only thing he did was establish that Hooper is always right. When Hooper thinks something is happening, he's right. That's sort of all they did. He's got some feelings for you that he is not ready for. That's yeah. all they really had. And he did say, all right. When he said, let's have a three-way.
I mean, he sat down after the kiss and...
I'm not saying
right,
it's not...
Right, but there's not enough thing. Before that. You're right. Well, okay. There's not enough before that not, has like a lingering look or whatever.
I'm saying that in terms of from a writing perspective, there's not enough brick laid down for me to go, I don't agree. This is a complete...
Absolutely.
This is a complete
I don't agree.
Really?
It's okay. Everybody's
here's
wrong.
Here's the exact arc of that story. All right, we're going to see.
I'm on your side,
asshole.
You're
about to eat those words, motherfucker. You're about to eat those words like Archie ate Mr. Weatherby. Here's how I fucking think that Kevin Smith did actually lay
is it
enough
the snacks?
Brick.
He's all
the
about
entire
pussy.
Arc is that he is an aggressively, outwardly homophobic, portraying this like, you know, I am a man kind of thing, right? He's repulsed by homophobia. He's constantly saying slurs. You know, and you know, these hateful things towards gay people, right?
Sure, sure.
I think the entire point of the character is that he is so unwilling to address it, right? That he's so unwilling to have those moments. Like, you can't have in the middle of that moment, like, an introspective, like, Holden bends over to draw a lamppost and his eyes linger on his ass a little bit, right? Like, there's no brick to be laid. I think the scene I go
no,
back
not
to
his asshole stare looking him in the eye because he's in love with him. I'm not talking about him wanting his asshole. The point is that he's
what I'm saying, looking
in
at
love
him
with
like
Holden.
He wants to
lay
have
down
sex
a little
with
bit of that.
I'm not saying that.
What I'm saying is, think of the scene with the duffel bag, right? The scene with the duffel bag. Who fucking? I mean, I will out myself now. I'm sure I jerk off in the very upper echelon, right? You know, they talk about the 1% wealthiest people. I'm in the 1% of guys who probably jerk off the most in the entire. Okay. World. I would never travel anywhere with 48 magazines of different porn because I need that much flavor.
Well,
and then settle on sometimes
I
like a chick and a horse and show it to a kid. I think Banky is shown in that moment, which plays very creepy nowadays. I think he's shown in that moment how much he is trying to write this narrative so that everyone knows that this guy fucking loves the pussy, right?
I'm not saying
loves it. I think it is there if you think of him as he's so afraid to have anyone see what he is unwilling to
admit.
I'm not saying
that the thou doth protest too much thing doesn't work. I'm saying that from a narrative perspective, the payoff, not in the movie itself, because there is no payoff in the movie itself. Like, it's not like he comes out. And also, you can be in love with male friends and not necessarily be in love with male friends. Like, that's just part of, you know.
Sure.
I'm not saying that isn't, the work isn't done in the movie for that. I'm saying that for the larger scale that we'll get into, when they pay off that bit in, like, when they pay off that bit in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Yeah.
It is a very flippant payoff in a way that I'm not sure necessarily respects, like, the journey that this movie takes.
Well, sure. Like, if Jay and Silent Bob had a tag word, it would be flippant, right? Like that's the movie.
But I think that's like that is sort of the harder pill to swallow with the respect to that Banky reveal.
But I think if you look at Banky at the end, when him and Holden have their shared moment at the Comic-Con, right? I think that's a great double meaning moment, right? Talking about how they shared a moment, and now he's going to share a moment with Alyssa. Right? I think that moment right there absolutely solidifies the journey that, you know, we've been on with those two. I think that moment is absolutely.
I think emotionally,
Banky looks
at
Holden exactly as Alyssa does at the end
of
that
movie. I think
emotionally,
you're correct. I'm not saying that that's not a thing What I'm saying is I'm not sure thematically there's enough bricklaid to pay off that supposition about the character. That's all.
I will say, since the movie understands completely, like the movie is saying this man is gay, he also is in love with Holden. When yeah. Holden just stands there and stares at him and does the little, are we having a moment hands, that is a fucked up thing to do to somebody who's in love with you who can never be with you.
Little, yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
It's pretty emotionally abusive.
Yeah, he's fucking with it. Holden is the worst human being.
Yeah, I think Holden actually is really a really hard character to root for in this movie because he's so
obtuse. You shouldn't root for him, but what I love about him is how confident he always is in his ridiculousness, and that especially that every single time he is shut down because he's being fucking ridiculous. Like that swag, that swagger that he thinks, this is the part that, like, upon rewatching, I was like, they did lay some groundwork with Holden for him reacting that way when he finds out that she's finger cuffs. How fucking swaggery he is in the beginning of that movie. Of just like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get out of
here.
I'm
going to do roll, it. Yeah, or his bandage patch. Yeah, but again, I think what this movie is, right? I think Alex said this earlier, and that's the point I come back to. I think you both hit on this, right? But the 37 dicks joke in Clerks is a chance for us to agree with Brian O'Halloran, share his outrage that his girlfriend had sucked so much dick, and laugh her out of the store and through the parking lot, right? This movie is saying, guys who act that way, we're not laughing with them, right? And I think that is an important kind of growth point for him in this movie. And I think you see in Holden, right? Because again, I don't think the movie ever apologized, but I think as a younger man, I was on the journey of self-discovery with the movie.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
I wasn't an enlightened young kid in the middle of nowhere. Right. And so watching Holden, you're like, yeah, he's bummed out that he can't have sex with Alyssa, but the way he looks at her with fucking disgust and rage as she is, you know, kissing another girl at the table, and then her and Banky are actually getting along. Right. And talking about their, you know, sex horror stories, right? That nice throwback to the Jaws scene.
Yeah.
And you watch Holden with this fucking
bummer.
Disgust and this, he's a this fucking, hatred for
he's
her.
He's a fucking wiener in that scene.
He's the fucking worst.
I think
he's fucking unbearable.
It's that, whatever this, bravado is. And I think it's funny because, now I watch it and, you know, we've all. Jay, I know Jay's tabled at cons. I've now tabled at cons. It is this weird sort of, again, I'm not saying this is exclusively a comics community thing, but it's the lens we're using for the movie. I have sat there and when I've walked the floor sometimes in Artist Alley with other people, there are people that I know that I've met personally at previous shows who I walk up to them oh, what's up, man? He goes, how you doing, welcome to my table. It's this weird sort of I've done this incredible thing, I put this together, so you're welcome. And I'm like, I'm gonna leave, this is awkward.
The put up on artist.
There's one guy in particular who I met at Long Beach Comic Con. The next con, he was so douchey about the book he had put out, and I was like, buddy, I came by to support you, and I met you the last time. You asked me questions how, I self-publish and all these other things, and I'm like, why don't we all just agree that it's very hard to do this together, and we all can be friends? Let's
Of all the things that Holden was and did, the thing that pissed me off the most is that in 1994, you could self-publish an indie book and make the
and
kind
make
of
like,
money to have
and
that.
And make, MTV money? Yeah, absolutely.
Fuck you.
And get a fucking cartoon deal, yeah.
Because you want to fuck your friend, you separate from the book and now you're not going to have the MTV deal?
Okay, so that's the thing at the end of the show that I was like,
you.
That's because, okay,
asshole.
One they paint Holden is he's like, he does that whole walking scene, and this you can tell is something that Kevin Smith was struggling with in real life. He's like, you know, I hesitate to call myself an artist. And you're like, yeah, you're doing, you know, Blunt Man and
literally
Chronic. You're not purveying on the populace Hemingway level art, right? No one's going to read this book and it's going to touch their soul. They might get a laugh or it makes them better. But I think people who refer to themselves straight up as artists in that moment, Kevin Smith's telling us what he's afraid he was becoming, right? If you read a little bit or like watch some of the stuff they put out about this time, he was really struggling with that, am I a Hollywood type person, right? And they were dating, I think, during or right before this. And a part of their big breakup was, you know, Joey Lauren Adam or whatever the fuck, she was, you know, a Hollywood person. He was struggling. He still wanted to be Jersey, all that shit. So you see him struggling with this, you know, am I a real artist thing, but doesn't want to be a douche who says he's an artist. Then he's super horrible to Alyssa the entire fucking movie, right? And then at the end, he just says, we've already created this thing and can keep making money off of it. I'll just fucking ruin everything. Like, why not just sign that away and get the cartoon money?
He's a self-published comic artist. If he wants to make something on the side, he can tomorrow. Yeah.
You can keep making the thing that makes you money. What's the matter with you?
And like, also, why just take all that money out of Banky's pocket?
Yeah, exactly.
The only evidence we have that he is not a piece of shit comes from the fact that why is Hooper, who seems to have a pretty good sense of himself, right? He's kind of our, you know, he's our baseline for a lot of this stuff, right?
Yeah.
His character judgments. Why does Hooper tolerate Holden? You think he would have seen through this immediately and hated his guts? Why does Alyssa come back to his apartment to go sit on the swings with him after he treats her that way in a bar? And then Banky obviously is the second fiddle guy who's showing porn to kids. So Holden has to be cooler than him. Everything that makes Holden able to even be watched as a quote unquote like lead comes from other people's judgments of him and that they keep giving him rope to hang himself.
Well, Hooper is like tolerates Holden and he thinks Banky is adorable because he knows Banky is gay.
I get why he tolerates Banky. But, he knows Banky needs to be shepherded.
Well, with the Holden thing, they all go to the same cons. They all work in the same industry. They all have to see each other all the time. And so, and he does have like this, you know, Ben Affleck charm about him when everything is going his way. We're catching him at this place, but he's big. He's in the industry. He's big in the industry. He's a guy that you need to be around. I don't know that this is, I am not a member of the LGBTQ community, but I am a member of the indie comics creator community. And there is so much in this. Here's something I just have to say right off the bat. That whole Tracer thing is whatever, but every single person talks about the Tracer thing. He's also the fucking colorist.
Yeah, he's the colorist. Like, it's always
kid's
the thing,
color,
that,
bro. That's nothing. Oh.
Do you know what it was? Shit. The color of comic fucking... in 1994. He does so much work on that book. He's the inker and the colorist and the co-writer. And
he's not the co-writer. He's the co-creator of the characters.
Mm.
We're gonna take that away from Banky.
We draw little doodles and then you trace them and you color them in like a child with a book.
Doesn't color them in.
This fucking breeder over here trying to take away from Banky, trying to take away from Banky.
You cut out pieces in the exact shape of the characters and the backgrounds, and then you overlay them on top of each other.
Yeah,
this is the way that they used to do it before. They don't have access to like digital coloring, which like Marvel did at the time, but like,
so you're saying now that tracers are even lower, is that what we're saying?
Who are the colorists?
Tracers have fallen even lower in the esteem of comic
colorists.
I just was hoping this would really rile Jay up. I was hoping the alcohol from last night would reboil in your blood.
Anchors have disappeared completely. All my jobs that I have to do, I pencil and ink for the price of one, because it's all digital, and they think that shit's easy.
So, I'm not going to say what book it was, but I was asked to write a book, and the guy who asked me to write it was very specific about hiring, not just the penciler, obviously, was important, but he wanted an inker. And I'm like, I think that's going to be hard to find. Found an inker, and I was like, okay, great. It was one of the worst experiences I've ever had working on a book, and I actually have a page from the book
because
on
of the tracer.
Wall. The tracer was not it was an overall problem, but I have
I could just see Jay. We're gonna get
I have the page on my wall specifically to remind myself to never deal with someone who talked to me, because he was like, I don't want to do anything digitally. I'm like, that's absurd. I'm like, you have to like this has to go into computers at some point. And I'm like, what are you going to do about lettering? He's like, well, let's do lettering the traditional way. I'm like, absolutely not. No, I'm not.
Well, that's like hating Jack White because he's really into vinyl, dude. Let the inker have their last stand.
Yeah. So
this is the tracer's last hurrah, dude. You got to let him have
this whole.
Oh, but it man. Was, it's I don't knock the corn out of your hand while you're at work.
Yeah, exactly. Let the tracer trace, dude. No, I'm just kidding.
I actually, it's funny because I think like you can boil the like artist argument in this movie down to literally the first time we meet Holden, which is it was fucking Willem is saying like, I love these guys, and he's making a comparison, and then you have Holden who gives this like really wordy literary comparison. It's like, bro, you are not making that. It's fucking dick and fart jokes.
Yeah,
come on. Be real.
Yeah.
Be so real with yourself.
One of the things that you can see in this movie is, unlike what we've been sort of told throughout the entire movie, Holden is holding Banky back as an artist, because Banky's book does really well. His solo book does really well.
Do we know
well.
It's doing and better Holden, than Bluntman and Chronic? Did it end up getting a major Hollywood movie?
Probably not better
movie?
Than Bluntman and Chronic, but definitely better than a 500 issue run of an issue one of a book about what just happened in the movie.
Well, sure, dude. No one's going to, when your friend says, hey, do you want to come read my sad bastard book about my breakup? Of course not. You'd rather read something called Baby Dave, probably.
Because Holden doesn't know how to color comics, but Banky knows how to pencil, ink, and color comics and write them.
Holden put out some piss and ash can version.
This
well,
is
I mean,
another.
If Holden
this is another
pencil,
great moment. Like
ink, come on. There,
okay, it would have been so different if Alyssa like found this book on the stands or something. But the fact that he just like waltzes up to her and just goes, "Hey, look what I made!"
It's the most manipulative thing in the entire fucking movie. It's
also,
like,
yeah,
you, dude.
Every writer knows how hard it is to ask people to read your shit and give you notes, and he just drops that shit right. And he waits for her new partner to leave like a fucking snake.
Well, he also didn't tell Jay and Silent Bob that he was making a book about them. They had to track his ass down. He's a piece of shit.
Yeah, that's the thing that I was unprepared for is I knew that at the end Holden made some not great decisions, right?
He
but
makes
I assumed
not great
they
decisions
were out
of the entire movie.
Yeah, I assumed that it was out of the emotionality, right, of being ripped asunder by modern sexuality, right? And I was like, I remember being a young man. I remember how that felt, right? Sure. And that's even taking off the table the worst plan in the history of cinema, right? Like, this is a terrible, this is like a Rogue One level terrible fucking plan. Take all that aside. I did not remember that Holden was pretty much a fucking scumbag from the start of the movie. Because even then, when fucking Banky has attacked a person, he's like, you fucking tracer. When Mosher's calling him a tracer and baby Casey Affleck. Right? And he goes after him. The very next thing they go to the panel where Hooper X stages a fucking shooting, right? And is yelling black power, right? The very next thing, Banky's helping him out. He plays a dead body. He gets up. He's feeling a certain kind of way, whatever. They're laughing. And he goes, yeah, Banky's dealing with being an inker. And I'm like, so even you are fucking, giving derision to your fucking partner of 20-some years. The guy who has helped you build this fucking awesome comic law. Like, I watched that movie and I was like, that's like me and my friends. That's our fucking dream, is to have a little place where we all go and that's our job and we create shit. So Holden had his fucking dream and Banky helped him create it and then still fucking calls him a tracer pretty much right in front of their peers so they can all fucking laugh at him too. I was unprepared for how much Holden was completely hateable in this.
Oh, yeah. And it all starts because he just made it big in this little niche industry that really the rest of the world doesn't care about.
Yeah.
He is king shit of Turd Mountain at the beginning of this movie.
Yeah.
And he fucking, he's like, he's like, that girl, I'm going to get that girl. Just watch me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I outsell her book by 10 times.
There's actually another thing I noticed this time that really bummed me out a little bit, because I just never thought about it. And I realized because it's such a, Kevin Smith Avatar movie. Like, all these things that people are saying are basically just one guy's brain. Although there is the story, although Mosier loved Guinevere Turner, which is the other like side of this, like why Chasing Amy was made. But
Guinevere Turner.
She actually is at the Meow Mix, the woman who introduced, who brings Alyssa on stage to sing the.
She's cute.
She was in
Kathleen Turner Overdrive.
They met at Sundance when Clerks came out, because she had a movie called Go Fish that came out as well that year at Sundance, and Mosier apparently like fell in love with her. Mm. And Kevin Smith was like, dude, we should talk about like writing a story about a guy who falls in love with a lesbian. This is how we end up with Chasing Amy altogether. Okay. But there's something I wanted to ask you guys with, and this was like a big question I never really pondered, to be honest, until this viewing, is so when they go to the swings to have the first conversation about like, hey, like I'm gay, do you have a problem with it? Do you want to ask a bunch of questions? Which is very nice of her, by the way, because, you know,
yeah.
Again, he was a total piece of shit.
I've got something for that. Don't forget that.
But my question is, when they start talking, because they start talking about business, which is like, oh yeah, 12 episodes, MTV once, that kind of thing. He's like, oh, that's great. He's like, yeah, I guess it's okay. He's like, I guess I just want to get back to something more personal, like our first book. Now, the first book that they wrote was essentially Clerks, which they called 37.
Mm.
Personal. Now, my question to you guys is the assumption here that they were involved with the events of Clerks in some way? Which, again, goes back to this theory about what a piece of shit Holden is he has assumed this personal experience, because everything she brings up
he's
at the Meow Mix, by the way.
Yeah, he steals. So Dante's reading this at the Quick Stop. He's like, Jesus Christ, they stole my story.
I'm not supposed to be here today.
With that Snagglepuss voice, he's just like, Jesus Christ.
Alyssa had sex with Allison Brie in high school. We know that.
Yep.
Rick Darius, right? There's a lot of that crossover.
She was at the funeral.
Banky banged Brandy Svenning.
Okay, so when you were saying why did she take the time to sit down with him and tell him all that shit, the biggest question is why does she come to his house the next day and knock on his door? And it's because when she was in high school, all of her best friends were dumb dudes from North Jersey. And she meets a couple dumb dudes from North Jersey, and she has the fucking time of her life. And she's like, oh man, I remember what this was like. Like, she's, you know, she hangs out with her new New York friends now and shit, but she gets to do this. She really likes him from the moment that she meets him, because he reminds her of a kind of guy that she used to be with, but now she's older and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then he breaks her fucking heart by doing the exact same thing that they did, brings up finger cuffs, which you could watch your fucking heart drop when he says that she moved to New York. This is over. Blah, blah, blah. Rest of the movie happens. I'm going to go back to that moment when he slaps the comic on her table. And all I want her to do is be like, I made a comic about our story, and here's the first issue with you naked on the cover.
Yeah. Also, here's your visual likeness. Jesus.
And then
where's her?
What I really wanted from her was for her to go, are you like, flip through it? Like, that was absolutely between us. And everybody at this con and every other con we're going to go to, everybody knows that we used to date. Everybody knows this is me. I left Red Bank, New Jersey because finger cuffs was chasing me around. Now I got to do it at work. Fuck you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a weird.
It's the give
such
of the movie.
A self. And it's really, such a self-involved, like, male thing to do, which is like, I dominate this story, therefore I'm.
What I'm disappointed in is that a version of that didn't happen, because throughout the rest of the movie, every single time he confidently does something that he thinks is a nice guy move, everybody calls him out on it. They shut him down, or they do their own thing while he cries in the corner. This last scene seemed to be telling the audience that he's a super great guy.
I'm not sure I go there.
Like, to me, it's one of those things where it's like, it's not that he's a super great guy. It was that the last scene is like, look, he's had a full catharsis. I'm like, no, he hasn't. He's literally doing the exact same thing he's done the entire movie, which is assimilate a story for himself that makes him the, like, quote, anti-hero of his own life. And I think that's, like, the problem with Holden's character overall is, like, all of us are the stars of our own fucking reality shows in our lives.
Yeah.
It's just Holden has now co-opted somebody else's experiences into his own.
Well, hey, Banky, since you're... That,
yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Hey, Banky, so it's just this... There's another... I'm just shitting on Holden. This is one last shit on Holden. It's this moment of... Banky, you are in love with me. Not you think I'm hot. You are in love with me. So I'm going to go ahead and fuck you once to prove it to you, and then I'm going to go date this girl. What?
It's fucking ridiculous.
It's the worst plan in movie history, right? Like, clearly...
Next to landing on the moon, to next to landing on an asteroid to blow it up, it is the worst plan in history.
But at least the stakes are high on that one. You're like, we don't have a lot of great options on the table. We're going to die, or we'll try to shoot miners to an asteroid.
Oh, yeah. It was so great to watch.
Because he's like, I thought of it a thousand ways. And I'm like, literally, this is the – it's that Doctor Strange moment, right? Like, this is the one – This is the only timeline where this all works out, really.
It was great.
But no, I think that you guys are hitting on something very important, I think, right? Is one, I think – I don't think that ending, I think there is a catharsis in it that's not as immediately rewarding as like when she slaps him and she's like, I'm not your whore. That moment fucking rips, because that's the moment we've all been waiting for. It's like, you fucking child. From like, the moment he lays into her at the hockey game, we want that moment. And she fucking walks. When we do the 1 year later, I think Banky gives him the rope to allow us to be like, all right, maybe there's still a thing. They'll be okay. I think when Alyssa gets that book, because he still doesn't say, I'm sorry. He still doesn't say anything from the heart. He just wrote it in this form. And he's like, yeah, give me a call. I'd love to hear it. I miss you, blah, blah, blah. I think when she's crying, it's not a, oh, I still love this guy. I think she's watching and she's like, he's still fucking stuck. Mm. I think she's looking at him and she's so sad for him.
I buy that, yeah. Makes
She's
sense.
Like, okay, this fucking guy is so, like, he didn't grow from this. He didn't figure it out. Like, wow, he's still that guy. Yeah. And I think the way that she watches him walk away, and he keeps looking back.
Who's
right?
That?
The reason
just
for the
guy.
Look back is you're waiting to make sure, like, wait, did that work? Did that work? She watches his ass walk out the door. And then when her partner comes back, she just goes, yeah, that's just some guy I used to know. Right? I think she's like, he's just this fucking guy from the past. Well, he's now a Rick Darris or a Coe. He's just another fucking idiot who didn't grow.
Yeah, she stopped. As far as I'm concerned, she stopped dating dudes because all this shit was too much. Every time she was in a relationship with a dude, he went off on some weird shit, some weird sex shit, spread it to everybody, whatever. And he did it again. He wrote it in a book.
Yeah, he's just, again.
The thing she didn't like was finger cuffs being spread to everybody.
It's growth. Like,
yeah, you're right.
If you're not going to grow, what's the point? And like him to essentially like drop a book like that, say, hey, I wrote this book about us, and also I'm not paying you likeness rights, and also, you know, it's extremely personal to our relationship. I'm going to walk away now. It's like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Like,
also, he's really stealing the title and all this shit from Silent Bob.
That's a really fucking... like,
he's going to play the brooding office in the... Or the artist in the diner ripping cigarettes and being put upon.
Yeah.
Like, Holden is just redoubling down on his character.
Yeah. There's no growth.
He doesn't go
like,
say fucking sorry to Banky. Let's see if we can still get that deal. Like, he's not a grown person by the end.
He pays his colorist back end. And he doesn't put his letter
everybody in
the
movie.
Book.
Everybody in the movie moving forward has some form of growth except for Holden. Holden is like stuck in this arrested development of, I am this tortured artist because I'm not doing anything that like, I'm not doing this personal.
And he's going to meet a young lady someday and she'll be, wow, a real artist. Look at this. And that's what happens with guys like him. Right. He's just going to redouble down and his bad behavior won't be adjusted. And I think, honestly, I think this to me is why it unlocks it being the best Kevin Smith movie to me.
I agree.
I think it's this perfect middle ground of the writing is very sharp and good. It's interesting. But again, it's that sentiment, right? I finally had something personal to say. And I think having watched Clerks and Mallrats, right? Clerks is very autobiographical. Mallrats has that base layer, but then it becomes a cartoon, right?
Yeah.
I think it was the choice. The only choice he had was he had to put something very real out there. And I think it's pretty fucking, I don't know if brave's the right word. That might be one of those cunty things that, you know, you say when you're a creator. But he did. He really opened himself up and just attacked all of his bullshit.
Absolutely.
Not in a heroic way. He said, these are problems I have. And so Holden is like all of his worst traits
the
stuffed
honesty
into one
is
guy.
Very real. Yeah.
And he is viciously attacking himself. And even as Silent Bob, he undresses his own bullshit in a way that I think, you know, I don't know that the rest of his movies have that level of introspection. And I think that's what makes this one just the best story he ever told.
I think that the necessity of being earnest is so real. Because, look, there's a version of this movie. There's a version of this movie that's a $2 million movie starring David Schwimmer and Jon Stewart. There's another world where that happened.
Yeah.
So, like, to me...
Oh, this was the one with Schwimmer and Jon Stewart. Yeah.
Yeah. And Drew Barrymore was supposed to be...
Yeah, I got that wrong on Mallrats, yeah.
So, there's a $2 million version of this in another world that, like, came out and, you know, had absolutely... No, and I'm sure it was fine on itself because, you know, Kevin Smith's Kevin Smith. But I think because Ben Affleck, and it could just be contextual because of culture and that kind of thing, but, like, Ben Affleck is a great avatar for Kevin Smith's, I guess, witticisms, I would say. Like, and his inability to, like, his ability to plunge the depth of his soul and his artistry to say, I have so many shortcomings. Here they
I'm
all
fucked
are.
Up.
And it's and it's because Mallrats ended up the way that it did, because like it bumped. Because you've got, okay, Dante is like, I just watched Slacker. It's really cool to just not have an arc as a person. It's not cool. It's not bad. It's just is, man. Yeah. Do you get it? And then when that all works out, the like T.S. and Brody don't really have an arc either. They're just slackers who do nothing.
They're just having a day.
And everything works
and
out
for
them.
And we celebrate them
like,
for it, yeah.
And everything works out for them. And they only rise higher and higher. And then this is, if you never grow as a person, you're going to lose everything and everybody.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is also the first Kevin Smith movie that takes place longer than a day.
I was truly blown away by how much I like this movie. Like, again, when Kate came down, I said, oh, this is going to be rough. And I even, like, when we were about to get to the we're all going to fuck thing, I was like, buckle up. But it wasn't even as rough. I mean, maybe it's because I already knew what was going to happen. Because when I first watched this, when I was a kid, I didn't see that, like, the groundwork is laid the entire time that this is not a good dude. He thinks he's a good dude. And Banky is like, I don't know. He's like a force of nature. He's in permanent adolescence, but he's not the guy that's we're supposed to be rooting for anyway. So we forgive him. And he only moves forward once he doesn't have Holden in his life.
But Banky is as honest as he can be while he's grappling with
Banky is probably the most honest character.
That's Bricklaid. That's Bricklaid right there.
He's honest to the he's honest to a point.
Yeah, when he just says you're too conservative for her, like this is gonna end bad.
Yeah,
he sees it coming because he knows exactly who Holden is.
I think this is another thing that I really enjoy, especially on watching this time. Another thing I really enjoy is like when they go to the meow mix. There's all of these very serious indicators that you would know, like going into Manhattan. And look, I'm not saying I'm some world traveler. I've traveled enough though for work and stuff like that, where I'm like, if you are invited to a bar called the Meow Mix, you wouldn't like ask, you know, oh, what kind of bar is it? Like those kinds of things. Like it is a strange thing to like
not a guy like Holden.
It's just a creep. Well, that's what I was just about to say. God damn it. I was just about to say is like, you are so like your walls are so high up. You're like, oh, well, I can walk into anything and just have the fucking swagger and
And it's because he never even left because
he's
Jersey.
Never had that experience.
His book worked out. He's got his nice space in Jersey.
He's in New Jersey.
He's got a lackey
who is always at his beck and call.
Yeah, he goes to New York for a tiny Comic Con. It's really funny how small they were. A Manhattan Comic Con would be that tiny.
I was just at one yesterday. They're fucking not like that anymore.
But no, he is very unworldly. But
very much
again, they don't really. This is the first time that I've watched this movie since I've been working toward making comics and lived in this world. And it's like he really is that guy who his book worked out.
Yeah.
He used to be like everybody else.
You know who those people are too.
He thinks he's on top of the fucking world. Oh, and the second something doesn't work out for him, he pisses his pants. Which I actually think that must have been Kevin Smith.
This is the most personal
morose
story
looking motherfucker.
That's gotta be a story for a lot of people who have great success and then the one thing, all of a sudden you're not this indie darling. All of a sudden you're not this darling that everyone loves anymore. You're kind of, people are like, oh, maybe it was a one time thing.
For me, I know who I'm thinking of. The writer thing. It's imposter syndrome, right?
Yeah.
So Kevin Smith made a career literally on, I'm this guy from nowhere, but I have so much to fucking say. And anytime you're writing or creating art, it's a omission that you think other people need to stop their shit, give you money to hear your opinions. There is an inherent narcissism in that, right?
Sure.
And I think a lot of us struggle with that. Why me? Why that? Why is it my thing? And you want to do it, but you don't know if you're worthy. And I think you can see him grappling with that. But I don't see Holden. Holden walks into that Meow Mix. He thinks his dick is like that colossal titan from the first scene of Attack on Titan. It's just going to kick down all the walls and get any he wants.
This fucking bar. I'll get whatever I want.
I think he...
Even Banky is more aware of what's going on.
But see, I think Banky is the best. I think Jason Lee is the best Kevin Smith actor. Right? Not that he's the best actor, but I think he's the most perfect in Kevin Smith movies.
I agree.
Yeah.
And Banky, I think clearly Brody is much more hilarious and, it's a more fun ride. I think Banky, you see him pulling at the chain a little more in a kind of muted way that becomes really interesting by the end of the movie.
By the way, I don't know if you guys noticed this. Jason Lee has fucking giant hands. They are enormous.
Yes. I never thought about it, but he is very precise when he adjusts his
huge
hat. It's a very,
I'm going to shake his hand someday and I'll see.
When Alyssa and Kim
I don't
want to
shake your hand, Brody.
When Alyssa and Kim start making out and Holden has that oh no, she likes, oh no. What
that is one of my favorite. His joy that he does that. Now that, my friend, is a shared moment.
When
I love the fucking Kill Bill siren going off.
Last night when I was watching it and he was clapping, I was like, oh my God, Jason Lee's hands are fucking enormous.
What a weird thing to...
So huge.
Fair enough.
Also, because
maybe
it's a 250,000.
Skinny people look like they have bigger hands.
Also, because it's a $250,000 movie, all of them have nicotine hands. That's just my favorite thing, by the way.
Yeah, dude.
All of them have that fucking thing. I love it.
Yeah, I got some. It's cool.
Yeah, Jason Lee is very good at making Kevin Smith dialogue sound right. Sound like it's something that fell out of your face.
That's how people talk.
It's very only impressive. Him and Alan Rickman.
I think Affleck does a good job.
No, everybody does. The people who do a good job, but these two do the best job.
Alan Rickman is the best actor that Kevin Smith ever worked with, probably. Alan Rickman is a goddamn one of the best of the best of the best.
I think Ben Affleck does a good job. I think that Ben Affleck has great speeches in this movie to the point where he gets to do that speech acting that a lot of great actors get to do. So he has these moments. And I mean, I used to
it's also part of his growth though, is that his speeches don't always involve the most $5 words you could think of.
Also, yeah, you strip out a little bit of the excessive pop culture, hey, I know something and I want everyone to know that I know it. That scene when he unloads on Alyssa in the car, Well, again, tremendously unfair.
Super.
It's a fucking great moment. And Affleck crushes it. Them in the Rain was the scene I was watching. And you're like, this was the first time where Kevin is like really going for like a big emotional moment. Like in the other two movies, in Chasing Amy up to that point, you're like, where's the like moment? Like you see Banky and Holden starting to fight, but it still feels in the realm of Kevin Smith. Like that scene in the car and Into the Rain, you're like, this is a kind of filmmaking he had not attempted to this point. Like this is a real deep emotional moment. And these two just fucking crush that scene. They fucking crush that. When she's pushing him in the rain, she's like, I'm fucking gay.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is like, just, she's totally right. She's like, that's so fucking unfair. And I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Very
and again,
much so.
I think I had undervalued this scene because it ends in her running back into his arms and kissing him like 2 seconds later after saying, I'm fucking gay, deal with it. Well, but again, I think now, I think we have this broader understanding of sexuality. And I think she is probably, you know, bisexual. I don't even know.
Well,
what
we know
she
she's bisexual because she had sex with dudes in high school. For
right,
me,
but
it was
the movie hadn't unveiled that to us yet.
Well, right. But I was gonna say earlier in my life before I watched this again, I would have said it's ridiculous that she goes back to him. But I see who she is because I'm an adult who has met people and remembers high school and remembers those girls who just like only hung out with dudes and had a whole lot of fun. And whatever, and she wanted to give this another shot. I think I already said this, but he reminds her of all her best dude friends from high school, and she misses those times.
Yeah,
she really does like him a lot. That's why she came to his door. That's why she wanted to be best friends with him, and she
also
was falling in love with him.
It's awesome that in a way the movie kind of suckers all of us. Where we're like, God damn it, if you are true, your dick can fucking turn him. Like, your dick can do magic. And then all of a sudden, it's like, no, Alyssa was fucking letting him write his own fantasy. Because that's what Holden is doing the whole movie.
I think she was just so annoyed that she was like slowly letting herself go on this journey of, maybe I could do this again. I've been fucked over a lot by dudes. Maybe I can do this again. And he stole that from her by screaming finger cuffs in her face.
Yeah. And we get to that.
Or
point.
No, sorry. I'm talking about this is later. He steals that from her by saying, I am in love with you and you need to do something about it.
Yeah.
Because she was
like, if
clearly,
we never see each other again, I wouldn't need birds to remember you. You're like, you little asshole.
I think it's true. It's clear that she loves him too. And she has from the beginning. And I think that he did not allow her to go on her slow journey back into this world that she wanted to go on. He said, you make a decision right now. And like, she didn't want to lose him. And so she said, fuck it, fine. And
the whole movie
is what a piece of shit.
But like, how childish
is
it?
We're not able to accept people for what they are.
Right. Well, how childish during that entire scene? Like, I remember when I was young, not really understanding. I don't think you're not emotionally mature enough to understand like what's going on. Like as I got older, I was like, okay, this is like highly manipulative behavior because in the middle of it, when he's like, well, there's always a period of adjustment when you're dating someone. It's like,
period.
Dude,
but see, that's what
are
I mean.
You
when I was
out
young
of your
and
fucking
that,
mind?
Yeah. When I was young and watching that, again, being a young kid in Indiana, I was like, oh yeah, they were right. Like they just needed some dick. Right. And then the movie pulls the rug out from under you and makes you actually stop and be like, oh, was I wrong? Okay. Weird. Yeah. Right. And it is. It's this. I've been down this road. I've seen how messy sex and relationships are. And a guy like Holden just hasn't stopped to think that, you know, someone else has their own journey. And I think her little speech when they're like post-coital. Right. And he's just, you know, she's like, I thought it was stupid to shut down half the population. What if I find someone who gets me and completely is complimentary to me? And she's like, so I shut out men at some point. And I thought that was stupid. She's open, man. She's on a journey. And then Holden still does, can I tell my friends you just needed some deep dicking? And it's played as like a cute moment.
She's
you're like,
trying to
that's it
learn
right there.
Something about herself.
He actually thinks that. Because, again, look at that scene. Why does he even ask her why now? he wants the fucking ego stroke.
Yeah, it's an ego stroke.
Yes. She's ready to heal on men because she got way too much baggage and bullshit with men. And she also likes women, and so she was just like, you know what, this is easy. And I think her version of what would have happened if he had just taken her for her word and given her a fucking second is could have been like 2 or 3 months later. They'd be sitting at a bar or they'd be like together, whatever. And she'd be like, I used to date dudes. I've got like, that's what I did. But, I was known as the town slut. No respect for me ever just because I enjoyed sex. A dude did put out a sex tape of me. Everybody called me finger cuffs.
She's unloading in the parking lot and he's making her relive all of this sexual trauma.
I think they have that conversation. I think her version of it is they have that conversation. She says, and I was off on guys for a long time, but I met you and we've been together. I think she was going to do that. And he fucking pulled the rug out and said, make a choice right now.
Well,
still not even ready to say that she's not gay.
Always going to end this way.
Yeah.
I mean, it was always going to go here because he was always going to hear finger cuffs and imagine the Spike Lee cutaway. The yo, co-wee, co-wee. And I was like, all right, I went to work. You know, he was always going to have that Spike Lee imagining. And that interferes with his I am holding McNeil, who has risen above the riffraff of Red Banks, New Jersey, right? This was always where it's going to go. To wrap this up, I will say, we do have to talk about Jay and Silent Bob real quick. But I would say, I think just the truth and the pain that he actually wrote down and didn't let his writing proclivities get in the way, which it did sometimes in Mallrats, I would say. He's never had better performances in a movie than these two screaming at each other in the rain and at the hockey rink. Like, they've never been better.
Agreed.
Her speech at the end where it's like, I've been down these roads. I'm not your whore. Like, these are the best and rawest performances he ever got. And again, I think that's one of those extra things that separates it for me personally. I also love at the end when he attacks the idea that Jay and Silent Bob are like, hey, we don't talk like these fucking cartoons. Right? As if he's attacking Mallrats in and of itself. But they're still Jay and Silent Bob. I thought that was like a pretty perfect needle he threaded.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, and then they're about to hop on a bus to go to Shermer, Illinois.
Yeah, because all these fucking weak pussies from John Hughes movies.
It's really... Yeah, I mean, again, like, I think just the self-reference, but also the self-reflection that this movie has. And again, the testament to how wonderful and powerful it is that we talk about it now, still discovering new things about it because it's about all of us growing up. I think it's a really fascinating examination of anybody going through not even like change, but just like the reconfiguring of how you work in the world.
Yeah.
And to see a character who, like, maybe when you're like 24, you see a character like Holden, you're like, oh, wow, he's really going through it. He's really dealing with something deep. And then, like, when you're in your 30s, you're like, wow, this is a guy who literally refuses to not just grow up, but, like, refuses to address the world around him as changing. Like, he refuses to change with the world itself. It's a really fascinating thing. I
watched this movie the first time looking at everything through Alyssa's eyes. And a big reason for that is one of my friends... I'm not going to say her name. She's going to listen to this. She doesn't even have social media. She thinks the government's going to get her.
Hey, spoiler alert. They are, dude.
So she's bisexual, and I always urge her to, like, date women because the women that she's attracted to are these smart, like, classy, like, women who she looks up to and is, like, a little... nervous to engage, and the dudes that she ends up with are just like the first skinny dickhead wearing a dirty t-shirt she can find. And when I was looking at Alyssa, I was just like, oh, Alyssa, you found another like fucking townie. This is the kind of dickhead that you like. Stop it. No dudes.
We all have
for
itches
you. You're not
with a particular
dudes
scratch,
because
man.
Because you can't do it. The kind of dudes that you like are not the kind of dudes who are going to like, not the kind of people you need to be with.
Hey, man, the heart and the genitals want what they want, man. I think that's the movie just shows life and relationships and growing older. It's messy, man. I love the messiness of this movie.
Me too.
And I think I like that it's a smaller budget. I like that it's less polished. I think it just lends to that. You know, this was when, like, you know, I was watching Road Rules and Real World back then when they were two separate shows. And you're like, wow, this is fucking crazy. You know, it has that, like, this is like, you know, it just feels very authentic all the time. Even in this kind of heightened storyteller sense, right? I love watching Kevin Smith essentially address himself, like the worst version of himself, and dress him down.
It's great.
And teach him a lesson that then he doesn't take. I think when everyone thinks about what we love about Kevin Smith, right? He's funny. He makes us feel like he's one of us. He's a great writer. And I think he really sticks to, like, he knows exactly what we want from View Askew, right? And I think if you were to make the case in a legal sense, I think this movie does the most Kevin Smith things well. Like, Dogma on a production level, way better, right? Dogma is also a very interesting script, right? Maybe some better actors here and there. I don't think it does more Kevin Smith things well. I think
I think it just addresses another part of his.
Right, but I think the heart that he writes this one with is the X factor.
We'll get to this next week, but Kate was like, I kind of want to watch Dogma now. So I did watch it last night. We'll talk about it next week, but Bartleby and Loki is their story together is a Kevin Smith story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I agree with Griffey though. Like, this is the heart that beats that you want Kevin Smith.
Yeah. This is the absolute,
and like real indie
what he's
darling
capable
movie
of.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Dogma is the other side of Dogma's another part of his brain that is the same. You know, look, I grew up Catholic, and we'll talk about that next week. Like, it's the same thing, man.
I think the underappreciated Kevin Smith movie is Red State.
Red State,
I would put
great.
That one very high on my list. That one fucking rips. So for me, that might even be higher than Dogma for me personally. But I still think Chasing Amy, because I think I would have had Dogma first until redoing this run.
Chasing Amy is definitely number one for me.
I think, like, so for me too.
With a bullet.
But again,
all right, we'll talk really about like Dogma when it comes out. But I thought that, and then I watched Dogma right after that.
It's so fucking good. It's so fucking good. Anywho,
next week, baby.
I hope you guys are all enjoying our journey through the View Askew universe. It's been really fun to go back and work through this. So as Jay said, next week, Dogma, so watch in advance. We also have Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back coming as a feature-length commentary on Patreon. That's patreon.com/FoamAlchemistPod. You can also find the Mallrats episode over there. So if you could be so kind, if you have a couple extra ducats you could throw our way, hook us up. We would appreciate it. Also, if you'd be so kind, go find Jay and his work online. You want to tell him where to find your stuff?
Jay Rollins art everywhere.
Yeah, jrollinstracer.com.
I trace my own pencils. Thank you very much.
Jay will trace a dead fucking body outline around you. If you come at him. Jay Rollins art.
Yes.
See, it's just fun as a guy who doesn't do comic stuff anymore. I can just fucking lob grenades at you guys. You fucking
not fair. And go and check out Misfit Parade.
Oh, there you go. Oh,
there you go.
Now we've all ended the movie where we're just kissing and sucking each other off. Look at how much we've grown.
Yeah, guys, we got stuff to do.
Yeah, we got stuff to do. All right, we'll see you guys.
I'm not your whore.
Alex, you're definitely my whore, first off. That's what this whole show is built on.
Like banging whores.